This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matthew Wells. In this week's programme, insecurity and urbanisation threaten Mali's ancient towns of Djenai, placing them on the official list of World Heritage in danger. And the future of Africa is in the hands of its youth, argues one competition winner from Kenya, making his first visit to UN headquarters. But first, five runners who fled South Sudan have been given the chance to compete in the 2016 Rio Olympic Games as refugees. A total of 10 refugees from various countries have been competing in the groundbreaking team, and the UN Refugee Agency UNHCR says they represent an international symbol of hope to millions worldwide. The African refugee Olympians have been a powerful inspiration to refugees from the continent living inside the Brazilian city hosting the Games. On Thursday, refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo went to cheer on their compatriots competing in the judo event for the first time. Laura Gerrell has the background to the story.
In the streets of Kenya, the first ever refugee Olympic team has begun training for the 2016 Rio Olympics. On the 5th of August, the small team will enter waving the Olympic flag. Five of them are from the war-torn nation of South Sudan, the world's youngest country. James Chengike, competing in the 400-meter race, has been a refugee since 2006. He spoke out about what the games mean to him.
My mom is in South Sudan. Even my three sisters, because we are four in our family, I'm the only boy. It makes them happy that I get this chance. I told my uncle that to come and tell me that I should utilize it well. Also, I should remember the refugees when I come back from Rio.
The team has only been together for a few months, so they won't be going for gold. It's the taking part that counts, says Rose Natike.
It is the first chance for the refugees to participate in the Olympics, and it gives us hope that for us maybe to encourage the young generation, our fellow refugees who remain in the camps, maybe to continue their talent, because, you know, for us it just started just some few months ago. Yeah, so we cannot compare our time with those who are high level, but we wish we try our level best so that we just do well.
Athlete Per Bell lost his family in South Sudan and hopes that the games will help reconnect them. There are around 63 million displaced people in the world, according to UNHCR. This means that the refugee team will be representing about the same number of people as the team from the United Kingdom. Biel realizes the significance of his participation.
And my fellow refugee, I can tell them that being a refugee is only a status, you see. You can change that status to be a better person in life. Most of them, they lose hope in life. Whereby when you call somebody a refugee, you feel ashamed. Even some of them, maybe, they don't have chance to do everything as a human being can do. Like going to school. Most of them, they are staying in camp because they lose hope in life. But as an ambassador for them, I can say that don't lose hope in life. You have a chance to change your life.
Laura Gerrell, United Nations.
Ongoing conflict in Mali is threatening some of the oldest towns in sub-Saharan Africa, the UN cultural agency UNESCO has warned. The old towns of Djenai have been placed on the list of World Heritage in danger. The four archaeological sites, which include a mosque, are almost entirely made of earth. Edmund Mukala is chief of the Africa unit at UNESCO's World Heritage Centre. Deanne Penn asked him about the historical significance of the sites.
The old town of Djenai, I think, if we're putting really in connections as well with the major city that has been inscribed on the World Heritage, also we're talking about the city of Timbuktu and many others, they have played quite a great importance in regard to the history of the kingdoms that have prevailed in that part of the region in the early centuries, even dating way back before the slave trade era. And they have contributed quite significantly in shaping up the characteristic of the African leaderships, as well as they have contributed quite significantly in the slave trade era. And this is also one of the elements that is quite important to know, that those during that time, these kingdoms were operated in dimensions that was quite in great competition to certain European countries at that time.
These old towns are located in an area of great insecurity, and I understand a team visited the site earlier this year. What did they see? Has there been any damage to them?
First of all, it was a follow-up to some of the state of conservation report that we've been receiving from the state party. We receive a significant alert in regard to the deterioration of the site, and the World Heritage Committee then decided to send a mission to the site to assess really the state of conservation of the property and to report to the committee. And that mission found quite serious deterioration of materials in the historic town, which in conjunction with inappropriate interventions, man-made of course, have started to erode the architectural coherence of the town. This is in particular if we're referring also on the urbanization and the increase of uncontrolled urbanization. So the mission also noticed that the continued decay of the archaeological site, both from natural and human-made factors, have led to the erosion of cultural significance of these crucial component parts of the property. The mission also pointed out that the lack of enforcement and implementation of regulatory and planning tools has also increased pressure on the historic buildings and the archaeological sites. And this leading also sometimes to some illegal interventions, which in itself did not really do justice for the conservation and management of the sites.
What is needed to safeguard these old towns, this World Heritage treasure, in terms of what does Mali need to do, but also the international community?
In particular, I would say that the Malian government, since 2012, have really demonstrated quite a great resilience and commitment within their limited means, both financial and technical, has been giving in their best, you know, to preserve and to protect this priceless cultural heritage.
Young people are the ones who hold the future of Africa in their hands. That's according to Sammy Musungu from Kenya, one of the winners of a multilingual essay contest who came to UN headquarters in July to attend a global youth forum. Mr. Musungu, who wrote his essay in Spanish, is currently living and studying in Venezuela and is in his sixth year of medical school. Deganit Perez asked Mr. Musungu how his international background influenced his life and his worldview.
It has opened my perspective of the world because now I see the world in a different point of view. For instance, we share ideas about the experiences in Russia. I share my experiences in Venezuela. And also my sister is in the United Kingdom. She also shares her experiences in London. And I think we have generated an interest in learning other languages. For instance, right now I'm planning to learn Russian because of my brother in Russia.
Do you notice from their experience and your experience across the world, do you notice big common points between places and people or big differences? What strikes you the most?
What strikes me the most is the common humanity that we share. I've realized that despite the fact that we belong to different nationalities, we practice different cultures, we speak different languages, we have the same destiny as human beings.
Tell me a bit more about your essay. What did you write about?
I wrote an essay talking about the Sustainable Development Goals and its relationship with the global citizenship in my academic and national perspective. Academic perspective as a medical student, national perspective as a Kenyan who speaks different languages but lives in a different country.
In what sense is global citizenship important to advance the 2030 goals?
Global citizenship promotes cooperation between countries so that it also promotes dialogue between countries, dialogue that goes beyond the national territories, the physical boundaries. So it makes the world a global village.
Let's talk a little bit more about your personal experience. You're becoming a doctor. So what is your perspective on development in Africa? Are you hopeful? Are you? What are the big drawbacks? Do you have criticisms or things that you rejoice in?
One of the drawbacks I have about Africa. Yes, Africa, we are improving right now due to development. And one of the drawbacks is our extra dependence on foreign aid, which I think is affecting even our productivity. And I think it is better that the youth in Africa should stand up to make sure that Africa's changed. We are the ones who have the future of Africa in our hands. We should not leave it at the mercy of the leaders who are pursuing their own interests.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.